Yajasinavaditamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Okay, in the verse 11 that we spent about 2 minutes on at the end of the class, the verse 11 is what we call the Darshtanta. The Darshtanta is the example that we use. The Drishtanta, the first one is the Drishtanta. The Drishtanta is the example. The Darshtanta is the thing that the example is for. So here in verse 11, we have the Drishtanta, the example of the dance hall. And in verse 12, we have the Darshtanta, which is translating really that Drishtanta, the example. It's translating it into what we're actually talking about. So these two words are important, Drishtanta, Darshtanta. So everything, there's so many... In the teaching, we make very strong use of the drishtantas, things that become an example for what we're trying to say. Because somehow, if you unfold a particular prakriya, a particular teaching methodology, and you have some sort of a drishtanta, an example that you can use that you're very familiar with, the mind clicks. And it says, even though the drishtanta is never exactly the same because it's only an example, it's not the actuality, but somehow it just makes the mind see what you're saying. So usually you do the unfoldment and then you give a drishtanta here. He's going back and forth in both ways. But just to kind of noticing in yourself whenever we use an example, like if sometimes I say, often I say, like the dream, or we use the clay pot, or we use the wave ocean. So many different examples. Or we use, like, for the self-luminous nature of the Atma, we use the sun, because the sun is, as though within duality, self-luminous. And it doesn't have any, it's not doing anything. You know, it's not performing a karma in order to illumine the earth. Its own nature illumines the earth. And so the sun becomes a good drishtanta, even though it's for the Atma, for the self-evident nature of the Atma, even though it's not perfect. None will be perfect. Akasha, space, is a good and, yes, imperfect drishtanta of the all-pervasive nature of the Atma. And from the standpoint of the creation, we can say that the Akasha is everywhere. It pervades the entire creation and everything exists within space. Space pervades everything and remains untouched. Both pervades everything and remains untouched. So in a way, it has very many similarities to the self. So the space is the most subtle of all of the five elements, the most pervasive. And then what is innermost of space is the Sakshi, is really consciousness, which pervades even space. So using these drishtantas, you can... get a lot of clarity. It's very, very helpful in the teaching, and it's really part of the teaching methodology. So here, in the verse 11, we'll just do 11 and then move right into 12, since the two are related in terms of drishtanta and darshtanta. So just to remind us, repeat after me for 11. Nritya shala stito deepaha.
Nitya shala stito deepaha.
Prabhum sabhyans chadartikim.
Prabhum sabhyans chanartikim.
Prabhum sabhyans chanartikim.
Prabhum sabhyans chanartikim.
Deepayet avisheshena.
Deepayet avisheshena.
Tadabhave pidipyate.
Tadapade pidipyate.
Ahankaram diyam sakshi.
Ahankaram diyam sakshi.
Vishayana pibhasayet.
Vishayana pibhasayet.
Ahankaraja bhavepi.
Ahankaraja bhavepi.
Soyam bhatyeva purvavat.
Soyam bhatyeva purvavat.
So here, in verse 11, just to reiterate, Nritya shala stittaha deepaha. The deepa is the lamp. The lamp which is placed in the dance hall. Nritya is dance. Nritya shala, dance hall. Stittaha means placed or standing there, situated there. So the deepa, which is there, situated in the dance hall. Prabhum is the patron. The sabhyan are all the audience, everybody who's filling the hall. And Nartakim is the dancer. Then it says, Deepa yet, it shines, avasheshena, without any particularity, means without any preference. It shines without any preference. Then, so, it's just this part, just to remind, it says, the light, which is there in the dance hall, illumines without any preference or specificity the patron, the audience, and the dancer. Tad abhave api, even when those are all gone, you know, when they're abhava, even when they're all gone, means the prabhu, the patron, the sabhya, all of the audience, and the dancer, even when they've left the dance hall, all of them, the light continues to shine, right? Nothing happens. Still, the light is there. So, that's the drishtanta. And it shows what we call the asangatvam. Asangatvam, the light. The light has no, in the dance hall, the light has no attachment to anything in the dance hall. Everything, we can empty the whole room. As long as the light is there, you empty the whole room, nothing happens. The light isn't offended. It doesn't feel like they're all leaving me. It doesn't think anything. It just remains what it is. Just the light that fills the room. If the room is full of things, those things are illumined. If it's empty of things, then the emptiness is illumined. That's the nature, really, as we'll see, of the sakshi. So he says, it indiscriminately, without any discrimination, without any specificity, it just simply illumines. It has no intention. It's not a karma. It's not performing any type of a kriya, no type of activity, no kartritvam, let me light this up instead of that. It just is simply the light, that's all. There's no kriyas at all. There's no subject-object relationship from its own standpoint. There's just light. And that light just remains in the presence or absence of whatever happens to be in the dance hall. And so we all know what they're talking about. All right, that's the good thing about a drishtanta. You go, well, yes, okay, we understand. But that's true. But now it goes to the darshtanta and say, here, the ahankara is the ahankara, that I notion, that I'm doing this, I'm the dancer, I'm the patron, is the ahankara. So the ahankara, diyam, these are accusative singulars, the di, this is the buddhi. So ahankaram, diyam, sakshi is the witness. So ahankaram, accusative singular, 1, 2, 1, 2, 1, sakshi, 1, 1, the nominative of singular. Vishayan, accusative plural. So you've got the ahankara, the buddhi, and then you have all of the vishyas, all of the things that can be objectified, you know, by the mind. So all of the vishyas, all of the objects also, and all of the objects, basayate. So in the first line, namath is sakshi, what we call the witness, we have to go over that again. The witness, basayid, illumines the ahankara, the buddhi, and all of the objects. So and also, api means also. So the sakshi, basayid, the sakshi illumines the ahankara, dhi, the buddhi, and the vishyas. Then it says, ahankaradi bhave api. Now, even a bhava, so if I break this sandhi, ahankara, adi, abhave, api. Even in the absence, in the abhava, even in the absence of the ahankara, etc., ahankara adi. So even in the absence of the ahankara, the buddhi, and the objects, even in their absence, svayam bhati eva purvavat, it itself remains shining just as before. Just as before, when they were all here, it remains shining. When they are gone, like in the deep sleep state, it remains shining. So it's still the same. We're using the light in the drishtanta as a sangha. It's not affected in any way by whatever it's illumining. In fact, from its own standpoint, it's just the luminary. It doesn't have any instruments, you know, to have a knower known relationship with what is being illumined. If you just think of the lamp, it's just innocently the light. And it illumines regardless of what is in the sabha, what is in the dance hall. Here, I, my being, innocently, my own svabhava, my own nature, is just conscious being. Conscious being, me, is self-evident. I don't need to bring in another light to light me up. I don't need another consciousness to light up consciousness. That really doesn't make any sense. It was okay. Consciousness needs to light up consciousness, but then we need consciousness to light up that consciousness, which then lights up this consciousness, goes into an infinite regress. Consciousness, like the light, is self-evident, self-shining. And so that's one thing. It doesn't need, like just like the light, doesn't need another light to come and light up the light, right? It doesn't need anything else. The sun doesn't need another sun to come and light up the sun. That's why we say it's svayam jyotihi, svayam prakashaha. It itself is the luminary. It is self-luminous, you know, without requiring a second thing. So like that, your being, consciousness, doesn't require a second thing to light it up. It is the light. Right? It is the light. And then, so it says, even when the ahankara, the buddhi, the objects, even in their absence, it itself continues to shine just as before. That purvavat, just like before, just as before, when you were awake, yeah, when you were awake, then all of these things are lit up, you know, shining after your being. That bhati anubhati, the atma is bhati, it itself shines, is luminous, and everything else is anubhati. Means it shines after that, right? And so the knownness, if I were to get rid of the whole creation, like in this, the Chandogya, they say, like, roll, just imagine rolling up the creation like a piece of leather and tossing it to the side, like that. Imagine just rolling up the creation, putting it over to the side, and then what happens to you when you do that? You do the whole creation, just put it over, get rid of it now. Okay. So what happens to you? Absolutely nothing. There's not even the slightest ripple of a change, because there are two different orders of reality. One is the luminary, the others are the illumined. What is illumined is what we call jada. Jada can be defined as inert. It doesn't really mean inert. It means it's not self-luminous. Inert means it's not self-luminous. It requires a luminary to light it up. Like, for instance, any nama-rupa, for instance, even the sun, requires consciousness for it to be known. It itself lights up everything, so we can use it as a drishtanta. But in reality, so as a drishtanta, as an illustration, it works so well because the sun doesn't need another sun to come in to light it up so that it can light up the world. It's self-luminous. But then the sun is not consciousness. And so for the sun to be known, the sun is jada. It doesn't have consciousness. It's not self-luminous in the sense of being consciousness itself. It needs consciousness to illumine it for it to be known. And so the sun is a good drishtanta, but the sun itself cannot be known. Like, say, for instance, a person is blind. They can look right at the sun, but there's no sun there for them, right? Because they don't have a means of knowledge that then can give the vritti in the mind that is then illumined by consciousness. And so for a blind person, they can know that there's such a thing as a sun, it can be described to them, but they have no experience of the sun. But the blind person and the seeing person equally have experience of me, of self-evident, self-conscious me, self-consciousness. I am Swayam Jyotihi. Jyotihi means light. I am self-evident Swayam Jyotihi. The self doesn't require any sort of a pramana in order to be. It is self-evident. The whole creation, put it to the side, I still am exactly as before, Purvavat. Nothing at all happens because my being is not an object within duality to be subject to change and be either on the right side or the left side or buried by something or whatever. It's not an object in consciousness. It's the adhishtana. It's a different order of reality. Like if we use certain examples, like for instance, that obvious one is the rope snake. The snake is obviously a very different order of reality than the rope. One is pratibhasika mitya. They're both mitya, but one is pratibhasika mitya. It's a subjective reality. The other is Ishwar. It's vyavaharika mitya. It's a shared reality. The pratibhasika, the projected reality, can't do anything to the vyavaharika, the empirical reality. What can it do? You know? It can't wiggle rope across the room. You know? It has no power at all. But we experience it. But being a different order of reality, it can't act upon the different order of reality. It's the same for us. You can have in the Mandukya Upanishad, they'll use the example of somebody had a big meal in their dream and they wake up hungry. They should be stuffed. But they wake up hungry, you know? Because the dream food doesn't fill this order of reality's tummy. It doesn't happen, right? So this different order of reality is so freeing to understand, because what it actually means is that this whole creation that we experience, including all of the upadis, all of the whole creation enjoys me, it has me as its adhishtana, as its being and consciousness, its knownness, that is its truth, but it's a different order of reality from me. So whatever goes on in this samsara, in this universe, does affect what is within the universe, right? All the laws of the universe, and all of the cause-effect that exists in the universe affects all of the objects in the universe. All of my actions, in fact, affect everyone. You know, I mean, we use the example like a butterfly's wing flapping in one part of the world will have a ripple effect to every part of the world, you know, or dropping a stone in a puddle in a lake. It will reverberate till the ends of the lake. So everything is interconnected and interrelated within this order of reality. Just an aside, that's why this Antakarna Shuddhi is important for us, because what affects my behaviors or the different things that I suffer from are in this order of reality, and they have to be handled within this order of reality. That's what we mean by antakarana shuddhi, by the upaya nishta. We have to take care of these things. Our knowledge, the removal of that ignorance, helps tremendously because as we gain that knowledge, this order of reality changes into mitya. It changes it. The order of reality, the satyam, we'd given this world, order of reality, this is the reality. Even if we define satyam, we wouldn't be able to say that. But we'll say like this: this is what is. And then I can say, this is what is. And then I also have my projections, pratibhasika. So I have this is the reality, and then I have my imaginations and my projections. But this is the reality. And in this reality, you know, as I experience it, I'm subject to birth and death and differentiation and all the samsara that everybody experiences. as we gain knowledge of that viveka, there's a differentiation between this reality and its adhishtana. All of a sudden, with analysis, this reality that was satyam, the reality, is reduced, I would say, in a way, to mitya. Because you can't establish that there is any, that this has any independent being of its own. There's so many ways that we prove that over and over, that there is no, it has no independent being of its own. It's all infinitely divisible. It comes into being and goes out of being. You know, we use the dream dashtanta, the use of your imagination, all of these illustrations that we use to help, and the seer-seeing differentiation, all the prakriyas, to help differentiate and actually bring the existence and the consciousness back to Brahman, back to myself, and recognize that this entire creation is dependent only on me. So all of this teaching releases me from my dependence on this reality. Dependence on this reality for my life, for my existence, for my happiness, for everything, actually. I depend upon this reality, which is completely unstable, for everything that I need, including life itself. Because we know this body dies. We don't know what happens after you go to heaven or hell or wherever. We have no idea, really. So whatever you believe. No, you don't really know. But you do know that you die. You know? You do know that you have sense organs and a mind. You do know that you suffer from reactions and pain. You do know what it's like to have desires that are unfulfilled, etc. So we are very familiar with the kind of the temporal nature of this creation, which is the only reality that we know. We know that I'm a conscious being, but the conscious being that I am is this body, mind, sense organs, which is subject to birth and death and change. So that's the condition. We have to do a lot of work to free ourselves from that condition, and a lot of understanding, a lot of seeing, to recognize that I am really the existence, the being itself, the being and the consciousness that the whole creation enjoys, myself being a very different order of reality. So what's different about it is that it's not objectifiable. And so if it's not objectifiable, it can't be an object that can be known through your pramanas. And not an object floating around in space. Atma can't be. Who's going to objectify the self? Because of the self, everything is objectified. Who's going to objectify the self? Nobody. There's nobody to objectify the self. But yourself doesn't need to be objectified, because you are self-evident. You don't need a pramana to be yourself, to experience yourself, because you are consciousness itself. That's it, swayam jyotihi, self, self-evident. You're self-evident. You can't be objectified. There's no time-space available for you, you know. You just simply are. And then all of this, the entire creation, shines anubhati. It shines after you. Its isness, its beingness, its consciousness, its knownness is just a reflection as though of your light. It's not even fair to say a reflection. The existence that we give to this is, I would say, more a projection. We project the being, which is non-beingness, which I can't objectify, I can only be. But that being, by my ignorant mind, because you need ignorance for projection, my being, you know, because of self-ignorance, is projected on everything that I experience. Because nothing I experience can be away from that consciousness or being. Because if it was, it wouldn't exist. So I give existence to everything, you know, not knowing that existence, that being, is my own self, the adhishtana of everything, the truth of everything. This is all mitya. I don't know that. I don't even know what that means. And then that all of this is known. I think it's known because I know it as a seer or as a thinker. That's why it's known. But I don't recognize that, in fact, the mind itself is known, and the sense organs are known, and the vishyas, all of them are known. because they're anupati. They're all shining after the conscious being, which is me. So as all of these things get straightened out, my mind starts to really settle down. Knowledge changes things. Knowledge removes ignorance, you know, the ignorance that causes me to search for myself in the world, the ignorance that causes the little boy who mistakes a rope for a snake to fall down screaming and afraid he's going to die. Once he sees the rope, the problem is solved, right? Or in the tenth man's story, when the tenth man realizes I'm the tenth man, all the suffering he went through is gone because there was the suffering didn't have any reality to it. And so here, as we gain self-knowledge, as we gain this viveka, what happens is that the source of your suffering, if the part of the source of your suffering that is really a self-ignorance, when that self-ignorance is removed, the suffering either completely falls off, like with the rope snake example, or it becomes mitya. It is removed from your being. You're the one that illumines the suffering, but you're not the sufferer. And you don't even know that you're illumining suffering because you're not a knower. Consciousness is not a knower. It's just conscious being. It is just simply me. And I become the sakshi to this world. I am the sakshi to this world when the world is there. If the world is there, then I get called the sakshi. But there is no sakshi, really. The sakshi is just a term that is used in reference to the world that is by the conscious being of the self, by its nature, reflects the world. The world is reflected, or the world is illumined by that. But the self is not doing anything to make that happen. It's not doing any type of action. But from the standpoint of the world, because of the self, we have the experience of a subject-object relationship, right? Even though the self is doing nothing. But still, I can differentiate and recognize that all of my experiences are known. They're known. So there has to be a knower. So we start with naming just pure consciousness as the sakshi, because there has to be some reason that the mind is known, right? Or that the experiences are known. As we remove all of the mind and the sense organs and all of the things that are objectified, we realize, well, where's the sakshi? Because any tools for knowing are been removed. So then the sakshi, there is no sakshi. There's just consciousness. There's just me, which we label as a sakshi in reference to the things illumined. But really, there's just the satchit conscious being, because of which the maya has that as its adhishtana, and so everything shines after my own soul. And so here, it says, the sakshi, which is in reference to the ahankara, in reference to the buddhi, you know, because the ahankara is illumined, it's a type of vritti. The buddhi, of course, is illumined, all of the activities of the buddhi illumined, all of the vishyas, all of the objects, everything objectified, all of that is illumined by who? Chidbapahu from the previous verse, is just pure consciousness, which we call as the sakshi in reference to all of these things which are illumined. But don't think there's a sakshi. The sakshi is a heuristic term that we use to label consciousness as the ultimate subject. But then even that has to go, because when you have subject, you have to think of an object, right? And if the whole world is mitya, there really is no object. There is really only consciousness. So what can we say? Like if we look at the clay pot, well, we have the subject clay and the object pot. Is that right? No, it's not right. And yet, this is the whole Vedanta road, and yet there is clay and there is a pot. You have to say, no, that's not quite right. You have to say like this. There is clay, and there is an experience of the pot. But the experience doesn't have any being at all apart from the clay. That's mitya. We experience it, but it has no independent being apart from whatever is the adhishtana. We experience the snake, but there is only rope there. The snake has no being at all apart from the rope. The rope is it, is its being. So like that, what we see is all of this creation shines with such chit, with conscious being, but it has no conscious being of its own in order for it to have a separate reality. And so just like you can't say there's the clay in the pot, so subject-object, you know, there's not a subject-object. In the same way, I can't say there's me and the creation. There's the sakshi and the things that the sakshi illumines. We can say seemingly, but actually, since you can't establish that the things that are illumined have any being at all, right, then in reality, there's the satyam and the mitya. There's the satyam and what we call mitya. There's two orders of reality. The one order of reality, mitya, depends 100% for its being on what we call satyam. So I am the order of reality, which is satyam, because I'm free from time, I'm free from space, I'm free from objectification. And everything else that exists within time and space and change is mitya. And so there is no duality there, because there's not two things there. There is one self and the experience of a creation. That's why when they define maya, ya, ma, iti, maya, that which is not, that is maya. So that's like a little mind twister. That which is not, that is maya. So you have to understand, we experience it, but it has no being. Ya, ma, iti, maya. That which is not, that which has no being of its own, that is maya. That means we have an experience of something which has no independent being whatsoever. So that's this creation. That's why the creation, including all of the upadis, don't ever and can never touch me in any way. I am their being, but they are a different order of reality. So I'm their very truth. I am what is actually there, so that's not away from me. In fact, they are all me, so the pot can say, I am the clay, and be correct. You know? But so these are all me, but I am completely free of all of them. Not because they're floating off in space somewhere away from me, but because they are a different order of reality. That's why at every given moment, without any exception, means all vrittis, all experiences that you have, satya-mitya relationship is there. There is what is actually here, which is me, and then there are all the mitya-vrittis. The mitya-vrittis, the mitya-emotions, the mitya-calamities, the mitya-everything can be very scary within the mitya itself, but in reference to me, they don't touch me in any way. Just like a volcano doesn't touch the space. You know, nothing happens to the space. The space accommodates everything. Volcano dust all settles down. The space remains exactly as it was before, during, and after the volcano. The air gets dirty, not the space. Right? Nothing happens. The space is asanga. So, now the thing is, this asanga means not. I'm not attached. There's no attachment. Like space is asanga. It's not like there's such a thing really as pot space. We fill the pot with some space and then it's living there in the, it's resting there in the pot. It's not resting anywhere. The pot is more subtle. So, I mean, the space is more subtle. So it's not being touched in any way or limited in any way by the space. You can't cut it with a knife. You can't burn it with fire. You can't blow it away with the wind. It's a sangha. It's more subtle. So myself like that is a sangha. And all of this that is going on can't touch it in any way. And so that's why the Atma is the greatest sanctuary. You know? Because nothing is ever happening to you. And that's number one. Number two, it's not a question of you being hidden away somewhere. It's like saying that the clay is hidden away from the pot. It's not hidden away. It is what is actually here. I am what is actually here. But I am a sangha. this is a different order of reality. So nothing happens to me, you know, as the world, as the Maya goes on moving. This we need to have this aparoksha jnanam. You have to have direct, immediate recognition of the reality of that. And so here he's using this example of the dance hall and the light, saying the light is the Atma, is the self. You are the one who is the light. Everything comes and goes, and for you it's nothing happens. If everything is gone, the light is fine. If the room is full, the light is fine. The light doesn't get lonely when the room is empty. Right? Light is a sangha. It is not a knower. It's just simply self-luminous light. Okay? So even when the ahankara and everything, say like in deep sleep, or say imagine it's not there in nirvikalpa samadhi or whatever, then I just simply am. Right? No problem. I don't even notice that. Okay. So now he gives a little bit more about this. So repeat after me. Nirantaram bhasamane.
Nirantaram bhasamane.
Kutaste jnatirupatah.
Kutaste jnatirupatah.
Tad bhasa bhasyamaneyam.
Tad bhasa bhasyamaneyam.
Buddhir nrityatyanekada.
Buddhir nrityatyanekada.
Nirantaram bhasamane kutaste nyapti rupatah. Tat bhasa bhasyamana yam buddhihi nrityati anekada. He says, nirantaram bhasamane kutaste nyapti rupatah. Nirantaram means constant without any break. So it says, when the kutasta is shining, constant is constant. The self-luminous, when it's shining bhasamana, means when the kutasta, I'll define in a minute, whose nature is nyapti rupataha. When the kutasta is shining without any change, without any break, as nyapti, as consciousness. Okay? Kutasta means that which never changes. Kuta, there's two meanings that for this, what kutasta, the most common meaning, kuta means like an anvil, you know, that a blacksmith uses and carves out, pounds out the metal objects on this anvil. He can pound and pound and pound and pound, and all of the metal objects or horseshoes or whatever is being crafted, you know, or pounded out on the anvil, which just remains exactly the same. So kutasta means it's staha, it abides like an anvil, means it is changeless. So the kutasta, so think of the kutasta also like the adhishtana, that kutasta, that one that is free from any change, whose nature is nyati, is consciousness. When that kutasta, or as you can say more accurately in English here, when that kutasta atma is, shines constantly, or we could say, as the kutasta atma by its nature just shines or is self-evident without any change, without any break. Nirantaram means without a break. Say antaram, something happens, pause. Something happens again, pause. There's breaks. Nirantaram, there is no break. So consciousness, as kutasta, it just remains always the same, shining without change. So, in that consciousness, tad bhasa bhasyamana iyam buddhihi. Iyam buddhihi, this buddhi, my mind, iyam buddhihi, bhasamana, bhasamana, feminine, this buddhi, bhasamana, is shining, tad bhasa, by its light, tad bhasa. So here, there is the adhishtana, there's consciousness. The buddhi, which is an object of knowledge, is not consciousness. It's illumined by consciousness. So it depends upon consciousness for its light. So being sattva, by the light of the kutasta atma, which is consciousness itself, this buddhi shines. this buddhi enjoys consciousness. And so the buddhi enjoying consciousness, nrityati anekada. Anekata means, eka means one, aneka, putting that an, aneka means many. Anekata means in many ways. So the buddhi, being illumined by consciousness, it goes on dancing, because it's the buddhi is the dancer in the drishtanta. The buddhi goes on dancing, means thought after thought after thought after mood, emotion, whatever the vrittis are. So just imagine, when we say dancing, that there's a dance of vrittis. You know, how many dance movements in a day? There are millions of dance movements, millions of vrittis, dancing along, all of them illumined, right, by consciousness. So the buddhi, illumined by consciousness, lights up all of the vrittis. So, and it, so the buddhi, dancing in countless ways, it is dancing. This buddhi, dancing in this buddhi, illumined by, shining by the light of the consciousness, dances in many ways, means many, many vrittis. And who is that consciousness? That consciousness is the kutasta atma, is my being, like an anvil that's there, as an anvil, never changing without any interruption, just abiding there as conscious being. There's no beginning, there's no end, there's no change, there's just myself in the present. In fact, we can't even say that, because if we use the word present, we can't find a present here. And any moment is mitya, it's indivisible into smaller moments. So Swamiji will always say, I am the presence of the present. Right? So time flows through my presence. Time itself belongs to Maya. So it belongs to the time-space creation, all of the change is flowing through my presence. I am the presence of the present. In fact, when you analyze it, you never experience the past or the future. You only experience the present. Right? And then you remember the past or you project into the future. But your experience is always the present. And then if you think, well, where is the present here? And then you realize, well, a moment is infinitely divisible, so there really is no present to be found here. But I am never out of the present. I'm never out of the present because I am, and I am free from time. So I am the presence of the present. And if I'm free from time, then I am the present, right? I'm the presence of the present. So even in contemplation, you just realize that about yourself. It's not as though you're modifying or that you are growing old. There's no time for you. That's why in some of the prayers to Dakshinamurti, he's called Yuvan, the one who is ever young. Ever young because there's no time. Swamiji will joke, you know, the Bhagavan's been around for so long, he must be, you know, just bending over and over. And but when there's no time, you're ever fresh. Puranaha, ever new. Ancient, but ever new. You have a lot of words for it. Because your being is absolutely free from time. Another thing that's so beautiful about that is because you are free from time and change. Being free from time, you're free from change. And you're the only thing that is like that. There's nothing to compete with that. But because you are the only thing that is there that is free from time, you can dismiss and differentiate yourself from everything else. If you can make it move or go away, if you can be without it, it's not you, it's Maya, it's Nitya. If you can change it, if you can turn your back on it, you're like, is that me? Let me see if I look that way or that way, you know? If you can get rid of it, it's not you. If it can be, if you can get rid of any type of experience, it doesn't have to be a solid physical object. If you can get rid of and be without any experience, it's not you, because you can be without it. You know? And so that gives this huge opening for viveka in terms of just being with yourself. There's only one thing that you can't change, that you can't get rid of. So you can just, sometimes it's good, just you just don't do anything. Just sit for an hour, you know, and watch what leaves and watch what doesn't. Not watch as an object, you know, but you're self-evident, and self-evident you doesn't leave at all. It doesn't change at all. You know? The mind changes. The mind becomes more quiet, maybe. It becomes more sattvic. The thoughts and the feelings just come and go, and things drift in here and drift out there. But they drift to here and drift there in this adhisthana, which is me, which is completely stable. And there's nothing you can do about that. You can't change it. You can change everything else within Maya. You can turn your back on it. You can change it. You can transform it. You can do all kinds of things. You cannot do that with yourself. And there's nothing else that's true for. And so that means that you're walking around with this beautiful situation for Viveka at all times. Because you are completely, fully, wholly present, not partially present, because no time or space. So you're a different order of reality. You're completely, fully present, the Satchit Ananda. So if you think that, oh, I'm not having Ananda, where's the Ananda Swamiji? But where's the Ananda Swamiji? I don't understand so well, but where's the Ananda? Well, obviously, you would say like that, that's too kind, you said. you would say, you know, your definition of Ananda then is incorrect. It's incorrect. Because if it's gone, it's not you. So that's not what they mean by Ananda. You know? That's a big thing to understand, because Ananda is the most misunderstood of the words. And so where's the Ananda Swamiji? It's like saying, where's the bliss, Swamiji? Where's the bliss, you know? Maybe your understanding of the word Ananda is not correct. So maybe change, we can change the word. The Swamiji was always changing words, you know, using English. See what would be a better word, you know? What about that which is the most dear? Because Ananda is, there's nothing more dear than Ananda. And that fullness, that wholeness. So what about you? What is the most dear? That one sometimes works really well. It gets rid of these different forms of bliss. And you just start focusing on your own being and realize that there is nothing more dear than that. And when that's a little light bulb goes off, and you see that your own being is Brahman. It is Ishwara. There's nothing more dear than that. You don't have to say it's Brahman or Ishwara. You have to say there's nothing more dear than that, and you recognize the truth of it. So here, in the light of the Kutasta, right, this buddhi dances, having borrowed that light. And by the light of the Kutasta, this buddhi shines, you know, and all of the vrittis are illumined because of that. Yeah. And then, next verse. Ahankara prabhusabhyaha.
Ahankara prabhusabhyaha.
Vishayanartaki matihi.
Vishayanartaki matihi.
Tala didarin yakshani, deepasakshava bhasakaha, ahankaraha prabhu sabhyaha vishayaha nartaki matihi. Taladi Dharini Akshani Deepaha Sakshi Avabhasakaha. This verse just simply reminds us what is what. So he says here, in the Drishtanta Darshtanta, Ahankaraha Prabhu, the patron, the one who the whole performance is for, is the Ahankara. So the patron, Prabhu, is the Ahankara. Sabhyaha, everything in the dance hall, all of the audience, all of the people in the dance hall, the audience, is the, are the vishyas, all of the objects are the vishyas. So the all of the patrons and everyone in the dance hall, those are all of the vishyas, all of the objects. Nartaki matihi, the mind, the mati, is the dancer. The buddhi, the mat, is the dancer. Taladi dharini, akshani, the akshas, the sense organs, are the da, are the sense organs, are the playing dharini, the playing, or the using of the tala, etc. The tala is like a cymbal, a musical instrument. So all of the different musical instruments that the musicians use are the, for instance, the tala, etc. All the musical instruments instruments that are being used, those are the sense organs. The deepaha, the lamp, is the sakshi. So the sakshi, which is avabhasakaha. The deepaha, the lamp, is the sakshi. The sakshi is the one that is shining. So he's just reiterating here on the different parts of this drishtanta. Okay, we might refer back to this, but now he's going to go on with the Vedanta a little bit more. I have to take these. I broke my glasses. One thing fell off and it's broken too. I can't fix it. I have to take it to the shop when I get home. So these are, you know, like reading glasses. I have to put them on so that I can see. And then I have to take them off so that if you're wondering. So the absent-minded professor can take them.
Hari Om.